Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
And now, the end is near, and so I take the final curtain.
Actually, it's not. It's not the end, is it? It's a start. It's a brand new beginning of Murder Mile. This is all very exciting, isn't it? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Murder Mile. This isn't really Extra Mile, well, it kind of is, really, isn't it? This is kind of the Q&A episode for 10 Rillington Place and Murder Mile, but also a reminder that this is not the end of Murder Mile, this is just the beginning. Ooh, exciting. I'm going to slurp on me coffee. For those of you who don't know, if you do miss Extra Mile, but you've decided to tune in just for the Q&A episode, which is this here. Hello, how are you? I did originally announce that Murder Mile was going to be coming to an end, just because it's quite relentless trying to do an episode every week, and it kind of broke me a bit. But because everyone was so lovely, and I got so many lovely messages off everyone, literally not just messages just saying, oh, sorry to hear that, bye. Literally lovely messages from people. People had really, really sat down and really thought about what they were going to say. And even if it was only in short bursts, it was really, you could tell it was really heartfelt. So obviously Murder Mile has a big place in everyone's hearts. So, because of the listeners, because of you guys, Murder Mile won't be going away anywhere. What I'm going to be doing is working on a... what my plan was is to do something a little bit happier, so to move on to other podcasts, because I'm always fizzing full of lovely ideas, and for me, having one idea is good, but it's kind of, I like variety, I like to keep myself busy all the time, which is why I'm struggling at the moment, because I'm on my week off and I don't know what to do. what I'll be doing over the coming year is releasing a variety of different podcasts. So there won't be true crime, but they'll be very different. The idea is that hopefully by the end of the year, you'll have lots of different podcasts by me. Like hopefully, if I can get this right, not just a podcast each week, like with Murder Mile, but maybe a few a week, maybe if I can get to a point, maybe daily, but kind of manageable podcasts. So, You'll be, for a little while, you'll slightly be losing Murder Mile, just for a bit, but Murder Mile will be coming back. So the idea with Murder Mile is, what I'm going to do, there's loads of really great ideas, stories that I really wanted to do, but never got the chance to do, because they've required just so much research to get right. And kind of things like the Blackout Ripper, that took me a year to research, and 10 Rillington Place was like a year's worth of research in about 6 weeks. Which I think that's what broke me, was doing that. So, what I'm going to do across the year is roll out some multi-parters, some exciting multi-parters like Blackout Ripper, like 10 Rillington Place, but release them across the year. So they'll probably be a little bit shorter, like 4 episodes. But my plan is, I've got the first one, I've got 3 in fact, that I really want to roll out. So the first one is very exciting. A slightly more modern one. There's no archive file for this, so I have to find a new way of researching it. But I've found some incredible research already, so I'm going to dive into that. That'll be a new perspective on a case that people may think they know, but they don't. The second one, again, it's going to be a relatively famous serial killer, but I will be focusing entirely on the victims' lives, which, as you know, everyone tends to forget, except me, because that's what I focus on. And the third one, this one I have to put away for a little while because it's going to take me so long to research because there's nothing really about it, but I know that this is the way to do it. It's going to be a multi-parter. So the idea is it has to be a multi-parter. So it will be, literally, you will get the first multi-parter. So this is technically the third, but the first of the multi-parter. The first multi-part of the multi-parter. God, I'm going to have to come up with a better word for this. The first multi-part of the multi-parter will be maybe like a four-parter. And you'll get that, and you can listen to that in its entirety. If you're a binge listener, that's not a problem. You can wait till those four episodes are done and listen to that. And then, maybe 2 months after that, you will get another multi-parter. And although it'll be a separate story, is connected to the first multi-parter. And then after that, you'll get another multi-parter. After that, so the third of the third multi-parters. And that will be connected to all the other two. So it'll be like a running story. So if you want to, you can wait a whole year and listen to all 12, if that's what they're going to be, or 15, or whatever it is, because I haven't quite decided yet. It's a big case. But yeah, that end one is going to be big, and not a lot has been written about it, and it's a little bit controversial, so I need to sit down carefully, and that's why I'm putting it last. I need a good amount of time to really, really nail this down properly. But it's going to be interesting, and the idea is it's going to make you rethink everything that you already know about the stories that we've told on Murder Mile. It's a biggie. It really is a biggie. So I'm looking forward to that. So that'll be exciting. But the idea is that with Murder Mile now, instead of it being weekly, I know it'll take a while to get used to. You'll be like, it's Thursday, where's my Murder Mile? What the plan is that hopefully they'll feel a little bit, it'll give me time to do the other episodes, do the other podcasts, but also they'll start to feel a little bit more special. Do you know, when it plops into your podcatcher, you go, oh, it's Murder Mile, fantastic. And then you get all excited and you rush out and then you listen to it and go, oh, shit. If you've missed that extra mile for the last couple of episodes, this is where Murder Mile is going. So going on a bit of a hiatus now, I'm going to be rolling out the new podcasts, hopefully soon. I need to sit down and start working on them. They'll be very exciting. I'm very excited about them already. And in there, I will be putting a kind of a launch date for when Murder Mile, the new special, comes back. But the plan really is with the new Murder Miles is not to put a strict deadline on them. I think that's what broke me with the others, is, you know, because obviously I have to research it and then re-research it because I'm finding the story within, and then I have to write it. I have to write it as a story. I do my own research into the victims, which is hard work. And then when I edit it, obviously I create most of the sounds as well. So you literally everything you're in there, except the music, is created by me. So pretty much from scratch. So that's why they take so long, and that's why they're a bit of a killer. So from this point onwards, I'm going to just be rolling out Murder Miles when they're ready, as opposed to rushing them and not getting everything exactly right. Which will be great. Brilliant. Okay, so moving on with stuff. I'm going to have another slurp of tea. Just wanted to say a little thank you to Kira and Kerry, who I was talking to last night on the They Walk Among Us discussion group. They gave... said, I can't speak. What's going on? They were saying we were talking about merchandise, I believe. I can't remember why. Oh no, about the upcoming special Murder Mile walk that I can't talk about at the moment. And they were saying if I could do the walk in a Reg voice, which would be good. But then they mentioned about having a Reg Christie ringtone, which I think thought was a very nice idea. So I'm going to work on a Reg Christie ringtone today. I'm going to record it, and then hopefully by the time this goes out, it should be in the merch shop, if I can get that right. So, yeah. So, I can't remember what Reggie's phrase is. What is his phrase? It's not the cup of tea one. I prefer it if you call me Reg. Well, have one of that, so you can have that as your text alert. So, that should be in the merch shop very shortly. Okay, patrons, new patrons. Even this is fantastic. Even though Murder Mile is coming to a kind of a slight hiatus, we've got new patrons, which is really lovely. So, thank you to everyone who stayed with me. That's been really fabulous. Thank you to those of you who have kind of moved away from Patreon but are still supporting the podcast. That's great. As I said, I sent everyone a kind of a note saying, you know, you don't have to stay with Patreon while we're going through this transitional thing. I wouldn't expect it of people to kind of hang around, but you know, many people have, which has been fantastic, and new patrons, which is fantastic. So a big thank you to Renee Ruskem, Jenny Pearson and Rosemary Hayes. Thank you, you guys. That's very much appreciated. Thank you for being a patron. It will be a little bit quiet on Patreon for a little while because obviously I don't have anything extra to give out because I'm not creating any episodes. But all my Patreon listeners, oh, nice select group of you on there. They're all going to be getting all of the first episodes of these new podcasts before everyone else. Sorry, guys, but, you know, they pay the bills. And also they... their money has actually helped pay for new equipment as well. So I've just gone out and bought a very nice, very handy kind of portable recorder. So instead of the big bulky one that I've got here that requires setup and stuff like that, what I want to do is to make the new podcast a little bit more accessible for me and a little bit easier, you know, less edit heavy. Because obviously the post-production on Murder Mile is huge sometimes. Sometimes it's like some of them have taken 5 days to edit, which is not good when it's a weekly podcast. But the idea with the new ones is that I'll kind of pre-rehearse them a little bit better. And then I can record them on the hoof and just, you know, just do them in 10-minute chunks. And then I'll decide, oh, yeah, no, take two was good. And then I don't have to edit them, which would be great. So it'd be a portable recorder that I can use in different locations. So thank you to my Patreon listeners. You guys have helped pay for that. That's fantastic. I've also reserviced the laptop again. And I'm going to get myself a little tiny, not a laptop, but just kind of like an iPad or something, just so I can write on the hoof, like when I'm out walking, so I can start writing some of the new ideas for the podcast. I'm going to try and make everything a little bit more accessible for me, so I'm not tied to one laptop, one battery. I can just keep working and working, and working while I'm walking as well, which I love. So thank you to Renee, Jenny and Rosemary. Thank you, guys. And thank you to all of my Patreon supporters and everyone who has supported Murder Mile. Right. Just to say, there's lots of just to say going on today. It's Valentine's Day coming up soon. So by the time this episode goes out tomorrow, I'm actually recording this yesterday. If you're listening to this tomorrow, which is today. Hang on, I've confused that. Okay, yeah, if you're listening to this today, which is Thursday, the day it goes out, I recorded this yesterday. Yeah. Unless you're listening to this on Friday, then I listened to this 2 days ago. I could go on, I won't. So, Valentine's Day is obviously on the 14th of February. That won't move, it always is on Valentine's Day. So, Saint Valentine's Day, as it should correctly be termed. I'm stopping doing the Murder Mile mug of goodies because, as you all know, and I apologise to anyone who received one and they weren't in fabulous condition, some of the sweets inside, for some unknown reason, even though they were hard, if you put them near a mouse and the mouse happens to breathe, the sweet melts. It was like some of the Fox's Glacier mints just melted, and they didn't melt in the wrappers. They melted everywhere and they seep through the box, and oh god, it was disgusting. So I've cleaned all of those mugs. I've replaced them. I think Nicola, you've just ordered one, so that's going in the post today, and it's clean, don't worry, it hasn't got any icky inside. But I've replaced all the kind of the melty sweets with kind of love hearts and Parma violets and stuff like that won't melt. The last of the Murder Mile mug of goodies, I think we're down to two now. That is it. But I have ordered more Murdermile mugs. So for only £10, only £10, this is fantastic, only £10, you can order an exclusive Murdermile mug. It comes in a special kind of box so it can be transported around the world and it won't get damaged. In there, I will put Murdermile stickers. There's two different types of stickers. A Murdermile fridge magnet, nice, decent-sized one. Some badges as well. And a personalised thank you from me as well. Ooh. Obviously, I write it on a little on my one-legged table. So sometimes the writing might be a little bit wobbly. I apologise for that, but, you know, that's it. That's it. It's a wobbly table. What can I do? Valentine's Day is coming up. So if you want to go to my website, you can order on there. Valentine's Day. I never get anything for Valentine's Day. Because my birthday is 4 days after that. What? That's almost as bad as being born near Christmas Day. Anyway, so yeah, that'll be on the Murdermile website. So, quick update before we go into the red stuff. Where am I at the moment, you're probably asking? You're probably not asking. You're probably going, I don't give a shit where he is. I am. This is why I've timed everything that Reg series to finish at this point and then me to do this episode here is because next week I'm dry docking the boats. I'm literally ready to dry dock. So I'm about a quarter of a mile away from the dry dock itself. I'm gonna drive the boat in. And then it's basically like, it's a lock, really. They close the doors behind me and then they drain all the water out. And then my boat basically sits on basically two pillars, really. So I can see the underneath of the boat. So that's where I'm going to be. I'm going to be in there for about a week. It's bitterly cold here, so I won't be able to put the fire on. I will be getting underneath and with a tiny, tiny little trowel, literally scraping the bottom, getting rid of all the crap and the barnacles and, as last time, snails. I had about 500 snails underneath my boat. Doing that, and then I've got to re-black it with this really thick bitumen stuff. So I've got to do that. I've got so much work to do. So that'll be a whole week of just repairs on the boat. So that'll be exciting. Looking forward to that. I'll post some pictures online and you can all go, ooh, exciting. It's very cold here. It's gone below zero. I was about 4 miles away from the dry dock yesterday, and I was like, I looked out the window and thought, oh shit, I won't be able to get to the dry dock because it had iced over, and it was so icy. I tried really hard to take pictures of this. There was the coots, the famous Murdermile coots. They were trying to get across the ice. But obviously they can't get through. Like swans tend to be icebreakers. They kind of use their bodies and break the ice, and they slowly get through the ice. But coots can't because they're so small. So what they were really funny. They were trying to get to a patch of water about a patch of water that wasn't ice, and the coots were walking across the ice. They were kind of slip sliding across. But the problem is coots are kind of the size of two hands. And black and kind of quite roundish, but then because they're wader birds, they have kind of long legs that are kind of longer than their body, and then big flat wader feet. And it's really funny, they were walking along the ice, half slipping and kind of in a really jerky motion, and there's three of them in a little row, and I was so desperate to take some footage of it, and I couldn't get to it in time. So that was my fun yesterday, watching the wader birds. So, what else today? Today is laundry day. Oh, exciting. I'll be in the laundry. That'll be good. I'm now, thanks to everyone who sent me lovely presents over the last 6 months or a year or whatever, but I am now seriously on a diet. Ugh, I've got a big round belly and I need to get rid of it. So I'm off the cake. I'm off all sugars, except natural sugars. I'm off Diet Coke. Yeah, I know. Even though it's Diet Coke, it's still not good for me. And so I've had my 3 days of Diet Coke headaches. So they've gone now, thank God. So I'm just on fresh fruit and veg at the moment. And that's it. That's it. That's all I'm eating for the next couple of months until I trim down into a less portly and rotund way. Yeah, I'm a little bit Winston Churchill-y at the moment. So, right, okay. That was waffle out the way. Let's move on with some Reg.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Right. Q&A. Here's one from Simon Armstrong. During his confession, Tim Evans seemed to know details of how the bodies of Geraldine and Beryl were hidden and that Geraldine was strangled with a tie. Was he actually guilty? That's a fantastic question. It's one of those questions that's kind of... it's been up in the air for a long time. Because obviously, if you look at the case evidence at the start, they kind of say it's kind of clear to the jury and the solicitors that Tim murdered his wife and then he murdered his child. Because he gave those three individual statements. And obviously... Tim's mum throughout said he's entirely innocent, this is a travesty of justice. And Tim's mum and his sister have held to that forever. They literally, still even to this day, still elements that they're trying to clear of his name, even today. Even though he was found not guilty and he was posthumously pardoned. Which is, you know, it's better to be pardoned when you're alive than when you're dead, but he was posthumously pardoned. But obviously when Reg was arrested, Reg actually admitted to murdering Beryl, but not Geraldine, which was weird. He admitted to one, but not the other. Which is an interesting side to Christy, that he would never admit to killing the child, killing Geraldine, but he was okay with killing Beryl. So obviously they had to reinvestigate the case. Beryl and Geraldine's bodies were exhumed. And double checked, and although on the bodies they couldn't find any traces of carbon monoxide poisoning in Beryl, Dr. Tier, who was the one of the pathologists working on it, said that because it had been about 3 years since she'd been buried, that there was it was unlikely that they were going to detect carbon monoxide anyway, which would have been from the gas that Christy had given them. But you're absolutely right, Simon. If you look at the statements, the three statements that Timothy Evans gave, he got the first one, which is after about 2 weeks he'd been prevaricating, he'd been in Merthyr Vale with his aunt and uncle. He was very worried about he was worried about his daughter growing up with that couple in East Acton, if you remember that. And then he knew that Beryl was dead and that she'd been put down the drain in front of the house. That's what he'd been told. He was worried about that. He was in a massive emotional turmoil. So he went to the Merthyr Vale police station There was Detective Constable Evans, no relation, and he gave his statement. And when you listen to that statement, it clearly is Tim. It's clearly bullshit. Because if you remember, he says something like, "I won't do the voice." I tried to do it on the last tour I did, and I couldn't remember how to do it. But Tim said Beryl wanted to have an abortion. He was against that, which is partially true. He met a guy in a truck stop on the way to Ipswich. He can't remember where, and the guy gave him a bottle and said, "Your wife needs to take these after breakfast." No, before breakfast. And then, if you remember correctly, then Tim said he took them home. His wife wanted a cigarette. She found the bottle in his pocket. He explained what the bottle was, but he told her, "Don't take them." Now, even though that is lies, the bulk of that is lies. And then he said, obviously, he took the body downstairs and put it in front of the down the manhole cover. And if you remember correctly, he said Christy had nothing to do with it. Right. Even though all of that first statement that he gave at Merthyr Vale is lies. Oh, excuse me. It is all quite clearly Tim's voice. When you read it in its entirety, it's entirely Tim's voice. It's him thinking his way through it, and basically the detective just sits there and just basically transcribes it. There's very little interaction going on at all. But obviously, so that would have been November the 30th. When Tim made it to... I'm working off my notes here, so... this is all just in my head. So it was around the 7th of December when he was at Notting Hill Police Station. He gave his other two statements. If you listen to those statements, I've given examples of them in the episodes. Tim hadn't slept in days. He was really tired. He was hungry. He was very confused. And it is very much believed that he was coerced by the police in order to make that confession. So... one of the statements is, Tim says, it starts with him saying, about Beryl, he says, she was incurring debt after debt. And even Tim's mother said, you know, he was a simple boy, you know, he wasn't well educated. He wouldn't have used words like incurred. It's not in his vocabulary. And also there were things in those later statements that Tim could never have known. So, like, it said that the Beryl was wrapped in a green tablecloth, which was his green tablecloth, which was upstairs, and that she was in the wash house. Now, Tim hadn't seen her in the wash house. Reg said that he was going to move the body, that he was going to do it himself. If we can believe as much as we can believe, Tim and Reg moved the body down to Mr. Kitchener's flat on the first floor. It's hard to know who is correct because there are multiple versions about this. But if you believe some of the honesty in Tim's statement, there's no way that he knew. He thought the body was downstairs under the manhole cover. That's where Reg said he had put it, and he hadn't seen Reg do it. But obviously Reg hadn't done it. He put it in the wash house. So if Tim had at some point seen the body inside the wash house, he would have also seen that Geraldine was dead too. But he didn't think Geraldine was dead. The shock of finding out from the police that Geraldine was dead, that was a real moment for Tim. So actually, if you look at the third statement after that, the third statement is the one where Tim entirely confesses to the murder. But he's clearly innocent. He literally is. You can almost see it in the statement that the police are coercing him in order, and they're writing it. Not as he's saying it, but they're writing it. They're going, "So what about this? Did you see your wife here with the green tablecloth?" He goes, "Yes, da 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 da." You know, as I said in the episode, Tim was easily led. He was easily led by Christy and many other people because he was quite a simple boy. So, I mean, this is the debate that still goes on today. There's still loads of theories out there. And the problem is no one was there. Everyone who was there is dead. And none of this can be proved. The police, that was their statement. They wrote down the statement. But this was back before the days when whenever anyone was interviewed, it would be recorded. So there's no recordings of it. There's no other statements. It literally is the police wrote the statement and then that was it. That was it recorded forever. And you took it as fact that these were the Tim's words. And obviously at the end, Tim signs it as true and accurate. And that's a legally binding document. So all of Tim's statements, all three of them, which are all full of inaccuracies and coercion, led to Tim's death, really. So yeah, we'll never know about that. There's obviously lots of details in all of those statements which lead to the fact that they were coerced. But there was no repercussions against the police for that. So, it's going to remain a bit of a mystery, that one. Question here from Sarah Stone. What would Christie be diagnosed as today? Good question. What would he be diagnosed as today? This is going to be interesting. I've got some... I'm doing a tour, actually, this Friday for the Criminology Department of the University of Wisconsin. So there's about 26 students that I will be given a guided tour of Soho's murders to. And I'm going to see if they know about Christie. I'm going to get them to listen to the series and see what they think. But... Cool. I mean, this is one that you could all probably join in on with this. See if you agree. I would say, okay, on the basis level, a sociopath. Right off the cuff, because he has no real care about other people. He lives in his own little world. Everyone else is there for his own facilitation. Do you know? It's all about the self. So I would say on the basis level, he's a sociopath. He's definitely a serial killer. You can definitely say that because obviously he killed his first two victims. There was a gap of a year between each, and then he took a gap of 6 years, and then there was more murders, and then at the end he had a spree of three. So he's without a doubt a serial killer. Do you know, he killed more than three, and there was a space in between. He's almost certainly a sexual sadist. Whether he, because obviously, as we've seen, do you know, he would take trophies from his victims, their clothes, their jewellery, pubic hair, as we've seen. Now, whether he was a necrophile is still debatable at the moment, because it is, well, because a lot of the bodies weren't found the next day, a lot of them were found, do you know, the nearest that some of them were found were kind of weeks after their death. It's hard to, and because some of them were prostitutes as well, it's hard to determine whether he had sex with them as a punter with a prostitute. Oh, why is my nose getting bunged up now? Trying to find my tissues. I put them somewhere. Where have I put them? That's so frustrating. Oh, there they are. So whether he had sex with the prostitutes as a punter, or whether as he strangled them and suffocated them whilst they were still semi-conscious, which is what is believed, that he raped them whilst they were dying or after they died, it's hard to tell. Obviously, forensics wasn't great then. It wasn't 100%. Oh, I'm sorry if you all heard me blow my nose. That was a bit disgusting. So we're unsure if he was a necrophile. But obviously Christie seemed to thrive on those circumstances, didn't he? The kind of... I think what made him a relatively... He wasn't the most efficient serial killer ever. Even though he thought of himself as a bit of a genius, he really wasn't. He was really not a victim of circumstance. He thrived on those circumstances. So he'd got everything around him that was perfect. He got a war going on. He'd got a city that was in rubble. There were thousands, technically millions of missing people. Because of abject poverty, there were loads of regular women who'd had to turn to prostitution to survive. Thousands, if not millions, of displaced people. There was body parts everywhere. There was death. So he thrived on those circumstances. Whether he would have thrived as well in the modern era, I think that's unlikely. I also think it's we're probably going to get less serial killers now because with the, you know, so cameras everywhere, and you know, increases in DNA technology and stuff like that. I really don't think that someone like Christie would really thrive today, especially as we don't really have things like the Blitz going on anymore. So, what would Christie be diagnosed as? Almost certainly psychopath as well. But I'd definitely say a sociopath right at the top of the list because it's not about death. It's not about gore. You know, he doesn't cut up the bodies. He doesn't dismember them. It really is about. It's about control. He's very much kind of a rapist out of control, really. Because rape isn't about sex. Rape is about power. It's hard. I wonder if anyone is out there and is a not a sociopath. Oh God, my brain is gone. If anyone is out there does know what he would be defined as today, let us know. I'm on the Murder Mile discussion group. Let us know. That'd be interesting to know. Another question here from Lorraine Wed. How can I not pronounce your name, Lorraine? Lorraine Ledwell? I put a W in where I shouldn't have done. So question from Lorraine. Did Christie ever voice the reasoning why he kept his victims' pubic hairs? And what other trophies did he keep? No, he didn't, actually. That was one of the things he denied, that it was his. Obviously, the box of pubic hairs was found in the G's Linctus pastels box in the back garden by a policeman. Christie never said they were his. He denied that most of the things were. In fact, with a lot of his statements afterwards, when he was arrested, like when he was arrested on Putney Bridge and taken to Putney Police Station, even his statements that I've used a lot of here, a lot of them were the police having to. Like, he would deny everything, and then the police will go, well, we've just found this, and he'd go, oh, well, do you know, he would have to rethink everything, and then he'd the only time he'd admit to things is when the police admitted that they had full evidence for this. So with the pubic hairs, I can't find any evidence that says that he admitted that they were his, but obviously, who else's pubes were they? We still don't know who the fourth pubic hair is. Obviously, the three clumps of pubic hair was Rita Nelson, Kathleen Maloney and Hectorina McClellan. But there was a fourth set there as well. And we don't know who they were from. There is a suggestion that they may have been removed from a woman who was still alive at the time. Because they said there was some regrowth on it. So he may have asked a prostitute to remove her pubic hair for him. That could have been one of his things. We don't know. I haven't found that in any statements anywhere. But so he definitely kept pubic hairs. Obviously, he was a photographer or an amateur photographer. He liked taking photos. He took photos of Beryl and the baby. As I mentioned in the last Extra Mile, he took photos of Pat, who lived in what was Mr. Kitchener's flat on the first floor, and asked her whether he could take some nudie photos of her, which he said no to. He did this quite a lot. So obviously he took a lot of photos. Those were kind of his things as well, his memories. Off many of his victims, he stole jewellery. When he was obviously getting a lot... When he quit his job and he was becoming quite poor, he sold many of these. So he sold a lot of the jewellery in the local pawn shops. That kind of kept him going for a while. Interesting. There were also the victims. So in a big trunk, he had the victims' bags, clothes and shoes. Now, some of these he would keep as mementos, but many of them he gave away to other women as treats. So as I've mentioned in the story previously, he would entice women around to his flat and he'd go, oh, do you know, you like with Kathleen Maloney, like one of the ways he lured her in was like a bed for the night. and some second-hand clothes. They all needed kind of, it was cold, it was winter, they all needed nice clothes. He got some of his wife's clothes, what he said was his wife's clothes, but obviously there were many of his victims. So, interestingly, the Blackout Ripper used to do exactly the same. He used to take his victims' personal possessions and he'd give them away to other women as gifts. This was one of the sides of the Blackout Ripper story that I tried to dig in a bit deeper to, but it was hard, really hard to get the details on it. There were some interesting letters in the original Blackout Ripper police file where the police had decided to track down some of the Blackout Ripper's other girlfriends, because obviously he had ladies tucked away everywhere, and track down a presents that he'd given them, because obviously he'd given them handbags and things like that. Obviously, you're probably thinking, God, why would anyone receive a second-hand handbag? But don't forget, that was World War II. It's kind of, you know, if someone's going to give you a leather handbag, and it's World War II, and everything is rationed, and it's hard to get stuff, you're not going to say no. You're going to know it's second-hand, but at the same time, you're going to be like, yeah, fantastic, I'll have that. So, there was loads of things that he kept, loads of trophies, but many of them were destroyed. So when he was leaving his house, obviously he left his house on the 20th of March, 1953. Why can I remember that? I have no idea. Don't have a cold. Just as he was leaving, obviously I mentioned that there was a couple who he illegally rented out his house to. I can't remember their names at the moment. John and Mary O'Reilly. John and Mary Riley. Why can I remember that? I have no bloody idea. Obviously, John Riley, when he turned up on that day to get the keys to the house, Christy was packing up his suitcase and his trunk, and John Riley said that in the trunk it was mostly filled with women's clothes. Which is interesting. So he obviously kept a lot of clothes, whether they were his wife's clothes or his victim's clothes, we don't know. But a lot of these trophies are kind of missing now. I know many of them were destroyed in the back garden, because he had the big metal bin in the back garden where they found the fragments of Ruth First's skull, the 92 fragments of Ruth First's skull. But in there also was newspapers and various bits of debris, so a lot of stuff was destroyed, so we don't know where that is, which is interesting. Poor dear, why am I getting all bunged up? So question here from Christine Mitchell. There's a couple of questions here, so I'll do them individually. Do you have a postal address set up? Yes, I've got a PO box, because I live on a boat, obviously. There is actually a service called Boat Mail, where there is a kind of a boat that goes around, they deliver your post to you, but I've never used it. I just have a PO box in Soho, so when I go in to do my tours, I go and collect my post. Do you pay council tax? Yes. I pay a river licence, and in that river licence, obviously for people who don't know, a council tax is kind of a generic additional tax each household has to pay to the council each year. It's normally like about £1,000, and that covers for removing refuse and stuff like that, you know, blah blah blah, etc. So yeah, I do pay a council tax, but it's through a river license, and it basically all the boroughs that I live in, because I have to move, each of them gets a percentage of my council tax. So because I don't live in one borough, it gets spread across all the boroughs. And there's kind of a team that goes around and they check where every single boat is, so they know how to distribute it. What happens to all your stuff? I guess you have to be ruthless about what you take on board, or do you have a self-storage container somewhere? Nope. I moved onto the boat having got rid of 90% of all the stuff that was in my flat originally. And then when I moved onto the boat, I realised there was even less space, so I got rid of almost everything. I was left with just a couple of books and my clothes and a laptop, and that was it. So and it was quite cathartic. I got rid of a lot of stuff. Like, I kept a lot of things that are kind of, I thought were memories, but really kind of, you know, you don't need half the stuff, do you? A questionary murder mile from Christine. You are pretty sarcastic about most parts of London you visit in the episodes. Are there any bits you actually like? Oddly, because it's in the... The sarcastic bits are actually just really a joke, really. I don't really hate London at all. I quite like London. I just like adding in sarcasm. It's kind of the London tone, really. If you've lived in London long enough, and it's a British thing as well. We also don't like bigging ourselves up and going on about how great we are. We prefer to be sarcastic. So that's really why I put those bits in there. But you know, I love all of London. I love all the back streets. I love every time I walk into town or somewhere. I always take a new location. I walk around all the back streets. I just love having a good old potter around. It keeps me very entertained. Cool. Okay. Brill. A question from Tracy Armstrong. Did you ever meet up with the Blackout Ripper's grandson? I've put in here / great nephew because I can't remember. Was there any clues in his past which gave away to a hint of what was to come? We never did meet up. We've exchanged a couple of emails, but I've kind of left him to do his own thing at the moment, just because it's obviously quite a big thing, isn't it, to find out that an important relative in your life is a serial killer or a spree killer. So he's going off talking to his family about it. So I've kind of left him to do that at the moment. I was going away to research the other cases that it is believed the Blackout Ripper committed. Unfortunately, the original police files aren't available, which is a bit of a pig. But hopefully one day they'll be released. But no, we've never met up. I think that was the plan, but we haven't done that yet. I've kind of left him to do his own thing. So, but one day. A question here from Dexy. Will Cult With No Name be doing music for your new podcasts? And where can I get their music? Well, delighted to say, I actually did meet up with Eric and Johnny of Cult With No Name start of January. Which is very exciting, and I spoke to them and said, could I use your music for the new podcast? And they were like, yep, absolutely. So that's done. Not too sure what the music will be yet, which is all very exciting. And they've got a new album out this coming April, so I'll probably be advertising that soon. But obviously, if you go to the Murder Mile website, the link in the show notes, if you go to podcast and then under there is about the music, and there's some all of Cult With No Name's albums, and they're really good. I've got all of the albums. So next question, we're almost at down to the last question. My word, how did we whiz through that so quickly? I say quickly, it's been 45 minutes. Question from my girlfriend Eva Green. Yes, do you know Eva Green? She was in Casino Royale and Penny Dreadfuls. It's a hard life being the boyfriend / butler / slave to Eva Green. Eva's question is, why are you so damn sexy and why can't I stop thinking about you? Well, Eva, did you know, interestingly, I've had exactly the same question come in from Kate Blanchett, Amy Adams, Jessica Chastain. I mean, the list is endless. The list, all these Hollywood celebrities who want me. Why am I so damn sexy? I think Eva's confused the word sexy with fat at the moment. And why can't I stop thinking about you? I don't know. There must be a reason. Maybe I accidentally locked you out of the boat, and that's why. I don't know. Oh, Eva, such a tease. Anyway, right. So now that this is done, we've done the Q&A episode. That was all very exciting. Hope that filled in some details. Obviously, you know, you can still message me on any of the social media platforms with any questions. I'll answer them on there. So now that's done. I'm going to send off this book, which Kim won, Kim Hodgkins. won this on one of my Patreon listeners. Won this. I did a competition to win. I got a little Reg Christie book. I didn't use it for the stories, but it was kind of my fact-checking book because it's quite nicely written. It's only little as well. So, Kim, you're going to be receiving that. I'll send that off today. All listeners, what's happening next? This is very exciting. This Murder Mile feed will go a little bit quiet for a while, so don't worry about that. That's just while I'm away working on all the other podcasts and working on the new Murder Mile podcast. So don't unsubscribe, because everything you need will be through this feed for now. If you want to, obviously we've already got like 65 plus episodes of Murder Mile already. Some people have already started doing this. They've started going back and listening to the old episodes, so please do. If you re-listen to one a day, this can be like one of your five a day. This will be your one of your five a day. Oh, I'm getting so bunged up. By the time you've done that, if you do one a day, hopefully by the time you've done that, the new podcast number one, hopefully, will be done. And if I can get it right, hopefully I'll be almost done with new podcast two as well. Not all of them, but hopefully the first episode. Because it'll take me a while to work out what they're going to be about. I want to do some rough versions first and then kind of see what I can do to make it better and, you know, faster and slicker and things like that. And then hopefully by then as well, I will have a release date for the new multi-parter. So it's going to go quiet for a bit, but don't worry, I'm gone into hiding. I'm just working on new podcasts. So hopefully by the end of this year, you'll have lots and lots of me in your ears. Lovely, jubbly. So thank you to everyone who's listened to Murder Mile. Thank you to everyone who shared and written reviews and supported Murder Mile. Thank you to everyone who sent really lovely messages. It does show, Murder Mile would be gone by now if it wasn't for you guys. So Murder Mile is there. And we'll be coming back very soon. Thank you to Cult With No Name for the music. Thank you for the music. Thank you to everyone who's been on a Murder Mile walk. Tickets are still available. I'm still doing Murder Mile walks there every Sunday. It's getting a bit busy at the moment, which is very good. So people are booking way in advance, which is great. So that's it for a little while. So everyone, this is not a goodbye. This is just a different hello. So from Murder Mile, this is Michael from Murder Mile, and I'm just going to say, see you soon.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.